Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources, and today I'm going to start with our magazine about heart health, and this is the Centennial Living's Complete Guide to Heart Health for people over 50. And last time we talked about medications, and today we're going to talk about polypills, the new kids on the block. Polypills are like multivitamins, except that instead of combining a bunch of vitamins and minerals into one pill, they're a mix of medications used to treat a single condition or a set of conditions. In the case of heart health, polypills typically contain at least one cholesterol-lowering and one blood pressure-lowering medicine. The thinking behind polypills, which are not currently available to patients but have received a lot of press because of three trials in the past year, is to make it easier for people to take their medications. Many heart patients are on multiple drugs, statins, aspirin, beta blockers, and ACE inhibitors, the latter two to lower blood pressure, to name just a few. And the more medications you have, the easier it is to forget one or more of them. Polypills increase adherence because there's only one pill to take, and they appear to be effective. In a trial published in the New England Journal of Medicine, last November, researchers followed 5,700 adults with heart disease risk factors for 4.5 years. They gave the participants a polypill, or a placebo, daily. The polypill contained a statin, beta blocker, diuretic, and ACE inhibitor. The statin lowers cholesterol, while the other three medications help reduce blood pressure. At the end of the trial, people who took the polypill plus an aspirin had a 31% reduced risk for heart attack or stroke compared to those taking two placebo pills. A 2019 study in the New England Journal of Medicine compared polypills and routine care, whatever the person had previously been receiving. The polypills led to a greater decrease in cholesterol and blood pressure. The researchers didn't look at cardiovascular events like heart attack or stroke or deaths. Polypills are likely effective and efficient strategy for people who struggle to adhere to their medications as prescribed. The downsides. While they sound kind of amazing, polypills aren't perfect. First, there's the if it isn't broken rule. People who have no problem taking their multiple medications don't need a polypill. And, of course, you should only take one if you actually need all of the medications found in it. More meds are not better. Finally, each individual medication in a polypill has known risks. In polypill studies, some people report a dry cough, lightheadedness, lower blood pressure, muscle aches, and stomach irritation. If someone has a side effect to one of the medications in the polypill, you have to switch to an entirely different one. Whereas if you are taking several pills and have a side effect with one, it's easier to stop one medication and continue the others. Who should be on polypills? Since they aren't available yet, there aren't any guidelines on who should take them. However, if you have a hard time taking all your meds for your heart conditions, you may be a candidate if and when they do become available. The bottom line on polypills. Polypills should potentially be another tool in the toolbox to treat heart conditions, Huffman says. They appear to be effective, especially when combined with aspirin, but also come with a small risk of side effects. Now we know. Now let's look at Prevention Magazine's Find Your Calm. And we're continuing on with Mastering Mindfulness. It wasn't clear whether such effects were attainable for the rest of us. So, Sarah Lazar, a Harvard University neuroscientist, pioneered a different approach. And the other effects that they were talking about is the things that we've talked about in the past about finding mindfulness. In two studies published in 2009 and 2011, she asked volunteers who had little or no experience with meditation to take an 8-week mindfulness meditation course. She and her co-authors then surprised the scientific community by showing that mindfulness didn't just alter the volunteers' brain activity to become more monk-like while they meditated. It also changed the physical structure of their brains. Compared with a control group, people who took the course felt less stressed. Their brains were larger in areas that affect learning, memory, and emotion, and smaller in the area that governs response to threat. This is the opposite of what happens to the brain of a person who is chronically stressed. Together with other studies carried out since, the results suggest that mindfulness training can help repair damage done by stress and can reshape the brain in a way that makes us better able to regulate our emotions and more resilient to stress in the future. Mounting new evidence also shows that mindfulness training can relieve physical symptoms, including chronic pain and fatigue. In one of the largest mindfulness studies ever conducted, for example, 61% of patients living with chronic pain who received mindfulness training said that their pain improved and that the improvements lasted at least for a year. These findings certainly raise an intriguing possibility. Stress creates a cascade of physiological changes, known as the fight or flight response, that trigger inflammation, the body's first line of defense against infection and injury. Heightened inflammation can be life-saving in an emergency, but inflammation caused by chronic stress makes wounds heal more slowly, worsens autoimmune diseases, and increases one's susceptibility to infection. Chronic inflammation has also been linked to some cancers and faster cell aging. In the United States and Europe, about a third of the population have dangerously high inflammation levels due to poor diet, excess body weight, underlying diseases, and other factors. The addition of stress only compounds the problem. So, can the stress-busting power of mindfulness stop us from becoming ill in the first place? The research in this area is more preliminary, but there is certainly some tantalizing evidence to support the idea. In 2012, a small trial of 154 people found that compared with control group, volunteers who practiced mindfulness had fewer colds, and when they did get sick, their symptoms were less severe and didn't last as long. Several recent studies have also found that mindfulness training reduces markers of inflammation in the blood and boosts activity of an enzyme called telomerase, which slows cell aging. Still, we don't have the full picture yet, and we know that mindfulness doesn't appeal to everyone. Nor is it the only evidence-based way to reduce stress. Physical exercise and cognitive behavioral therapy have similar effects. While strong social connections are associated with a lower risk of stress-related disease in the long term. But so far, it looks like mindfulness training does help to reverse not only the psychological consequence of stress, but the physical effects it can have on the body as well. Which leaves us with one final question. How much mindfulness meditation do we need to do? Some studies have seen small, brief effects on mood and pain after as little as 5 to 10 minutes of mindfulness meditation practice per day for 3 or 4 days. The effects of lengthier mindfulness courses seem to have more significant and longer-lasting results. However, rather than seeing mindfulness as a miracle cure, then think of it instead as a lifestyle change, like exercise or healthy eating. The more you do, the greater the impact, and the benefits last as long as you keep practicing. And the sidebar article reminds us mindfulness can help repair damage done by stress, reshaping the brain in a way that makes us better able to regulate emotions. Now, on to AARP, the magazine, and a look at some more of the do-it-yourself ideas for your forever home. The one we're looking at today actually is project number 4, because we've covered the others in previous programs. Grown-up Fun Zone. Tamara Day, a designer and host of HGTV and DIY Network's Bargain Mansions, has some ideas for us. Being stuck at home has been challenging in so many ways, said Day. So why not focus on the joy? A dedicated game area, she says, is an instant happiness upgrade, no matter how old you are. Whether it's for Mahjong with friends, Connect Four with the grandkids, or solo puzzle making, creating an inviting, beautiful space for games and playful competition adds the best kind of value to your home. To try it yourself, most of us went months without pulling out fancy things for entertaining. Day took that as a cue to rethink the china cabinet. Precious plates and crystal are nice, but where's the fun if they're gathering dust? Instead, she says, clear part of a hutch or buffet for board games and cards. Get rid of the ugly cardboard boxes and put the game pieces in a beautiful storage bin made of bamboo or woven seagrass. Or make the game the centerpiece. For a puzzle or a big game like Monopoly or Scrabble, displaying it on a big gold tray on a table is aesthetically pleasing and an invitation to enjoy yourself. Inflatable non-skid roll-up puzzle mats, around $10 on Amazon, let you save and stash your work on puzzles that are true art pieces worth putting a frame around. Day likes the wooden Pelli puzzles, a jigsaw series from Curiosity, which are laser cut with no straight edges. Or you can call in a pro. With the help of a contractor, you can turn an awkward spot under, say, a bay window into a sunny banquet with hinged padded seats that lift up to store games around a gaming tables. Day also likes flip-top octagonal poker tables. They're great for either a casual dinner or a casino night, depending on how things roll. And in the sidebar for now and forever, a lazy Susan in the center of a game table can help people with range of motion issues. Or buy deluxe edition game boards with built-in turntables, says aging-in-place expert Bill Port. Task lighting pointed directly on your playing area is a must for aging eyes, and it improves the look and feel of a space as well. Project number 5, anyone can garden. Leanne and Steve Ford, co-hosts of HGTV's Home Again with the Fords, this is what they have to say. Older adults who gardened for 2 months during COVID-19 lockdown reported much better health than those who did not, according to a study. Keep things growing by sprucing up your planting areas for many seasons of delicious returns. Nothing feels better than slowing down, getting outside for sunshine, and watching those vegetables grow. You can try it yourself. The Fords recently built garden boxes from scrap wood they salvaged from an old kitchen. It's a very simple build with beautiful results. She and Steve installed 4 6-by-9-foot boxes. After drilling in 3-inch deck screws to join the 4 sides, they treated the finished rectangular frames with water sealer to give the boxes a couple of extra years. They dug up the grass, graded the surface, and put down a weed barrier to avoid growth where they didn't want shoots. We staked the boxes into the ground at the four corners, filled them with dirt, and put pea gravel around the outside of the boxes to create walkways that gave us a European feeling. Or you can call in a pro. A local landscaping company or handy person can install an irrigation drip system to keep your plants watered on a timer. Or let a professional hang canopy shade sails overhead to keep you protected and cool in the midday sun. A fountain or other garden feature creates a zen ambience. And in the For Now and Forever section, Bellport likes vertical and raised planters that enable greenskeepers of all ages and heights to comfortably work. And benches in the garden give you places to rest and smell the roses. Now let's do one more. This one, ADUs, the ultimate aging at home upgrade. An accessory dwelling unit is a small residence on the same lot as a larger primary dwelling. You may know ADUs as in-law suites or alley flats, but they come in many shapes and sizes. Remember the one that Fonzie lived in on Happy Days? Because they're small and self-contained and can be located in pricier established neighborhoods, ADUs provide more housing options for people of all ages, incomes, and physical abilities, and adapt easier to fit future needs, says Rodney Harrell, a vice president of Family, Home, and Community at the AARP Public Policy Institute. Whether you're converting from an existing structure, such as a garage or building, a standalone unit, the ADU should contain everything you need to live safely and comfortably for many years, Harrell says, including having its own cooking area, bathroom, and sleeping space. For older residents or those with empty nests or retirement in sight, focus on age-friendly universal design features like zero-step entryways and hallways and bathrooms that are wide enough for people with mobility issues. But it's more than handy pool knobs and flexible chopping surfaces that make ADUs so promising. ADUs make it more practical to stay in livable communities that people might otherwise be forced out of due to costs, Harrell says. You're often closer to transportation, to healthy food, and interesting shops, to parks, to social connection, and other things. ADUs help you stay independent and live your very best life. If you want to check into these more, you can go to AARP's Future of Housing ADU Video Library at aarp.org/future of housing to hear stories from ADU dwellers. Now also from AARP the magazine, the rising toll of autoimmune diseases, when your body attacks itself. And we'll probably break this article down into two sessions. Our risk of these common disorders may be much higher than that of our parents, researchers say. So what's going on? For Debbie Vivari, 68, it manifested as insomnia, a tightness in her face and eyes, so dry that no amount of artificial tears could stop the burn. The now-retired IT pro from Rockville, Maryland, was told she had Sjögren's syndrome, which attacks the body's moisture-producing glands. For Hedy Grovenar, it started in 2007 when she noticed her golf game was suffering. Her arms felt unusually heavy. Soon, the 77-year-old from Sacramento, California, was struggling to brush her teeth. The diagnosis? Giant cell arteritis, a disease affecting blood vessels that feed the head, neck, and arms. What 70-year-old Gene Davis thought was a stomach bug only got worse until the retired financial manager from Allentown, Pennsylvania, found he had to stay within sprinting distance of a bathroom at all times. His doctors informed him he had ulcerative colitis, an inflammatory bowel disease. Paula Cross, 59, was driving near her home in Niles, Ohio, when her vision in one eye went completely black for 3 seconds. Cross saw an ophthalmologist who, when she diagnosed that Cross's eyes were visibly bulging, diagnosed her with thyroid eye disease, in which antibodies attack both the thyroid and certain cells surrounding the eyes. These four people experienced wildly different symptoms, and each individual had a different diagnosis. The root cause of the various maladies, however, was the same. All four patients' immune systems had staged an inexplicable attack on a part of their bodies. It's a medical puzzle. Autoimmune diseases, a diverse class of afflictions caused by an errant immune system, are scary, often debilitating, and sometimes deadly. And for reasons that researchers don't fully understand, cases seem to be rising precipitously, especially among people aged 50 plus. I've been trying to unravel the mysteries of autoimmunity for 4 decades, said Frederick Miller, MD, scientist emeritus with the Environmental Autoimmune Group at the National Institute of Health. Autoimmune conditions, like most diseases, are diseases of age. If they're increasing, as his research suggests, over the next 50 years, autoimmune diseases as a group will be some of the most common and costly diseases in society, he notes. How autoimmune disease manifests itself varies so much that more than 100 conditions fall into this category. Some are mild and manageable, others life-altering. Among the most common autoimmune disorders in the U.S. are Crohn's disease, type 1 diabetes, multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis, Hashimoto's thyroiditis, celiac disease, which is an immune reaction to gluten, the protein in wheat, barley, and rye, and psoriasis. What brings them together is their root cause. Your immune system is battling some part of you, an organ, your nerves, your joints, your skin, or your blood vessels, body. This article is called Queen of the Playground. I revived a childhood skill and won a surprise trip abroad. Author Joy Jones created a master's team of double dutch jump ropers. It looks tricky, but double dutch is easy to learn, even if you're older. Jumping two ropes that are swinging in opposite directions is more rhythmic than single jump roping. And you rarely fall down because your feet stay pretty close to the ground. You can pick up the basics in under 10 minutes. You just have to be willing to look foolish and have fun. I learned how to double dutch as a child. It seemed primarily among black girls in cities in the Northeast. Then I grew up and put my jump ropes away. But I got back into it about 17 years ago when I formed the performance group DC Retro Jumpers. The founding members are women over age 50. But we've got all ages in the group now. Our motto is, not everyone likes to exercise, but everyone likes to play. A few years ago, a reporter saw my group performing at a street festival and wrote about us. The next thing I knew, we were on a plane to Russia to tour as part of a cultural exchange sponsored by the U.S. Embassy in Moscow. Our first day, we double-dutched in Moscow's Red Square. We also performed in St. Petersburg and Belgorod. We were well-received everywhere we went. Our handlers on the tour were all Russian men, and they were huge fans of hip-hop music. One of them came to see us in the U.S. He even entered a hip-hop dance competition in Baltimore and placed in the semifinals. So I guess you could say that the cultural exchange was a success. I would encourage anyone to return to something they loved as a child, or try a kid's skill you've always wanted to learn. If people think you're immature, who cares? For me, double dutch is like a combination of confetti and champagne. It releases a happy feeling and makes everyone around you feel good, too. And this story was told to Sharon McDonald. Joy Jones, 66, is a semi-retired public library assistant and the author of 5 books, including one about double dutch called Jayla Jumps In. My friend in Canada sent me these little bits and pieces, so I'm going to share them with you. Me, I'm surprised at how winded I am by this exercise. Personal trainer. This was the tour of the gym. Well, folks, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.